Welcome to the Earshot podcast. I'm Lorena Allam. Today we take you to a place and a culture that many people know through the headlines for its natural disasters and political upheaval. But this little island nation is a whole lot more. African, French, Caribbean and American cultures collide in Haiti, creating an intensely passionate and eclectic music scene. Last year, Brietta Haig was offered the chance to work on a video project about music in Haiti, showcasing a group of talented but undiscovered musicians living in the capital, Port-au-Prince. La Cou Musique was to be Haiti's Buena Vista Social Club.
If you type Haiti into Google search, you'll instantly want to book a holiday there. Picture all the tropical island clichés. Palm trees and white sand, smiling children diving into an inviting Caribbean sea. And right next to these images, you'll see scenes of absolute horror. In 2010, the entire country was all but destroyed by nature. Hundreds of thousands of Haitians died in one of the most catastrophic earthquakes ever recorded.
These conditions are really horrific, and you can see the sort of struggle that the doctors and nurses have to try and help as many people as possible, but it's overwhelming. As soon as they have a few people come in, another wave comes a few moments later.
God help us, she shouts. In this valley, so far, no one else has. Philip Williams, ABC News, Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Outsiders know all about Haiti's tragedies. It's the paradise famous for being the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It's how we often come to know countries where disaster, poverty and conflict are the primary angles reported. I came to understand Haiti through its music. Stepping out of the sweaty chaos that is Port-au-Prince Airport, I found myself stunned by the sunlight that bounced off concrete construction sites. I'd arrived in Haiti with a mission to shoot videos with Haiti's most exciting new band, a band intent on shaking up the music scene. The only problem was, I barely knew a thing about Haitian music. Music producer Zach Niles gave me a crash course.
I remember landing here and first of all being like, oh, I've been here before, because it felt so familiar to places I had been in Africa. It just had that the smells and the visuals and the colors and the sounds and all of it just felt really familiar in a nice way.
It was Zach's work with musicians in Africa that brought him to Haiti.
I was invited down to Haiti with a documentary that I had produced called Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars.
He soon returned under radically different circumstances.
After the earthquake, or probably the day of, I remember writing to David and just saying, you know, if there's anything at all that you need. And he was like, can you come down? And I was like, well, sure, yeah, of course, I'll come down, I can help. So when? It was like, tomorrow. Had an afternoon flight down to Haiti and landed in Port-au-Prince, you know, a week after the earthquake. And this, you know, kind of felt like a war zone with all the military planes and everything around. I think it was an interesting period as for me, both in having seen Haiti in its most desperate moment, but I also, it was the first time that I had lived there and also been able to see physically, it's a gorgeous country. And it was kind of, I actually had a weird conflict of being there in a really difficult, desperate period and also daily waking up and being sort of awestruck with how beautiful the country was at the same time. And I think that combination affected me pretty deeply.
Zach's experiences in Haiti inspired him to explore what he loves best, music.
toujours gain de l'espoir qu'a couler la kem.
Haiti's relationship to music is deeply profound, political, and spiritual.
Haiti's relationship to music on a broad level is definitely different than any place I've been. And I've traveled, like I said, you know, to a lot of places where music is integrated into life in such profound ways. But I don't know a place where there's such a cultural pride.
Despite music forming a huge part of Haitian culture, the sounds of the island are relatively unknown outside the Caribbean. Unlike Cuban music, there hasn't been a definitive movement outside the country.
I don't have a real answer for why Haitian music doesn't seem to have made the impact. I think language is definitely one of them. The pop music here, compa, is a style of music that I don't think is really ever going to be extremely interesting to foreign audiences as it's being produced these days. And the very traditional music here will always only have a niche sort of market. So trying to find that line between finding what's popular and new and building on what's authentically purely Haitian and finding that mix that works. And it also takes somebody willing to invest in that and try and promote it internationally.
A complicating factor is the number of influences informing Haitian music. Canadian singer-songwriter Chris Phelan.
It's surprisingly varied for such a small country, but it makes sense when you consider the history of Haiti and the slave trade and as a colony and as a French colony. You get deep and varied tradition. Like there's anything from the voodoo drumming, which really comes from West Africa, mixed with traditions of like almost calypso Caribbean music and the troubadour music. There's a form of music called contredanse, which comes from the French contredanse as well. And then you have this carnival music, rah-rah music, which is very just percussion-driven, basically performed by kids. It's very punk, you know, like kids walking through the street, making a lot of noise, moving, marching. It's like marching band music. You also notice a lot of similarities, or at least I have, with like New Orleans music. Haitians will say that they invented the merengue beat and the merengue style of music, although Dominicans will vociferously argue against that. But so you have that sort of Latin style as well that weaves its way into things. So it seems to be coming from all angles here.
So with all these influences, all this history, how exactly do you get the world's attention? You form the ultimate Haitian supergroup.
When I started formulating the idea for La Cumusique, I had a really basic idea, which was kind of like Buena Vista Social Club, Haiti.
In Haitian Creole, the word la cou carries multiple meanings. It means backyard, a gathering place where people come to sing and dance, or to debate and share a meal. It also means home.
After the slave revolution, when Haitians moved back onto plantations after the plantation owners had been kicked out, they went onto the fields and actually started setting up their communities in these circles, the semicircles on the fields, as a way to mark out a territory to say, you know, these guys can't come back. So it was almost like setting up a perimeter around land against the plantation owner. So it's and those were the most original lacus started that way.
band member Steve Valcour.
That's where you grounded. That's where you come from, kind of. It's like it's your earth. It's your laku. They put the umbilical cord there. They when you sick, you go there. When you need guidance, you go there. When you get lost, you go back, and everything should be okay. So it's like a safe place. It's a laku.
One of the big names that always came up was a guy named Bulo Valcour. I think of him as like Haiti's B.B. King or something. He's this total legend, guitar player, jazz, blues, voodoo. He was one of the guys that I wanted to find. But, you know, I thought he was going to be this untouchable sort of figure that I would never actually get to meet. And I came down, and really early on, I made a connection with an American woman down here who said she was going to Steve Valcour's house. And I immediately was like, Valcour, well, I mean, I wonder, is there any chance that, you know, he's related to Bulo? And she was like, yeah, of course, it's Bulo's son, you know, he's a musician. And so I was like, well, I'll come. And I went down and went to Steve's recording studio. It was this little basement in his house with like chickens and dogs and goats and everything running around. And they were recording a session, and another guy that was there was Jonas Atis. And we literally within a week, I had met both Steve and Jonas, who have become the leaders of the Laku band and project.
So he came to my house at the studio. We keep on talking, and we had people around. We have musician. And a really nice vibe going in the studio, and he really likes what happened. And he explained us the project that he wanted to do. I was like, wow, this is a really nice idea. And then we start by one picking up the vibe, and then we have a lot of talk about it. And then I remember we had our first jam, not even a performance. It was just a jam in the yard of my house. When we performed that first song, we said, okay, that's it. We have to go for that. It was amazing. And then from that day by day, we put other people, we grew up the idea, and then it grew up as a let's make a song, and then it's like, let's make a band, and then it's growing up, and then now we are Laku Music.
When it came to putting together the band, it was important to find musicians who could understand traditional styles as well as the more popular modern sounds. Steve Valcour and Jonas Atis were the first to join the Laku, followed by legendary Racine singer and instrumentalist San Bazao, accordionist Alan Just, and the only girl in the group, Nadine Remy, with a voice to rival even the greatest of divas.
Moi relé Remy Fanita, mais non artiste mais c'est Nadine. Moi gain 21
ans. My name's Remy Fanita, but my stage name's Nadine. My dream is to record an album and make videos so I can live better than I'm living today. If I became a big star, I would rebuild my house first, I could pay for school and be educated, and I would also help my family. I know I'm still young, but you know what they say. Today is for the older people, and tomorrow is for the children.
The band dreamed of creating an album to capture the traditional and modern sounds of Haiti. Messages of political resistance are exceptionally important to Haitian music. The first traditional song they reimagined was Pezek Café, an old protest song about a boy in a marketplace being harassed by police. For band member Jonas Artis, the song is a perfect example of the way music can be used as political resistance.
Nous sommes jeunes chanteurs, musiciens.
Music is the way we express ourselves against all injustice, against all immorality, against all violence, against all politics too. Because underneath these politics, there are always negative outcomes, and that makes it impossible for us to live well. We are young singers, musicians who are fighting to change our country and improve our situation through our music.
Jonas's passion for protest is not unusual given Haiti's turbulent political past. François Papadoc Duvalier was Haiti's most infamous dictator. He opposed a military coup in 1950 and was elected president in 1957. His rule, based on the use of personality cult and voodoo, resulted in the murder of an estimated 30,000 Haitians and the exile of many more. Some of Haiti's most powerful protest music came out of this reign of terror. Chris Phelan has worked with recording artists in Haiti and is surprised by how activated the country still is.
It's socially active music, but it doesn't seem to have a cynicism to it. It's like this music can still mean something, and it's a tool of expression and message, and it's a unifying sort of tool that people still have a belief in, it feels like to me, which I was surprised to see.
A succession of despotic presidents and political uncertainty has created a constant state of unrest.
There was a very intense energy in Port-au-Prince. I've spent time in various refugee camps in Guinea and near the border of Liberia while there was a war going on, and that was sort of my first exposure to being in a sort of humanitarian crisis, and it was super intense and it was eye-opening, but it almost doesn't compare to the energy of Port-au-Prince and the intensity of it that I wasn't expecting.
You're listening to Earshot on RN. Following the earthquake, criminal gangs moved freely through the cities, further destabilizing the country. Port-au-Prince is one of the most dangerous cities in the world. But for Zach, it's a stereotype easily perpetuated.
I think a lot of people who come to a country like Haiti feel that they're on an adventure. Like people feel that they've proven something by coming to a place that's perceived as difficult and dangerous the way Haiti is. And Haiti is just life for me now. And I see my community just the same way as I see my community in Vermont in many ways. You know, I walk by neighbors and stop and ask them about, you know, their crops or their family, and just the way I would do at home.
One of the things that binds a Haitian community together is music, and specifically the sounds of traditional instruments.
The relationship that people have to the tambour, the traditional drums, or to the cornet, people identify themselves as Haitian through the lens of music.
You have the song that I sing that called Tamboun Frappé. It's another really, really nice song. It talked about how Haitian is bound with tambou since day one. Everything that we did has tambou in it. When we wake up in the morning, we wake up with tambou. We always have tambou going on, and that's our force. And every time we hear a tambou, our strength doubled. That's basically what the song is about.
Oh man, I mean, you can see people who are living in ways that seem almost unlivable, and when somebody starts playing the drum or a rah-rah goes by, I mean, it's like a spirit gets in them and they can get up and dance and they'll go marching in the street and laughing and having more fun than I might ever have in my entire life is what it looks like to me. I see people expressing through music, expressing the kind of joy that I almost feel like I may never express. Next sorti an Afrique tout kon sa ou. A go si, a go la, a go e ou. Depi nan la kou nou kon sa.
After 6 weeks of shooting with Lacou Musique, it was time for me to go home. As I drove through the streets for the last time, I heard all the sounds that make up this incredible country. The sweet voices of a gospel choir floated down from a neighbouring Lacou. Compa and then Racine played on the car radio and was momentarily drowned out by furious voodoo drum beats. It was the perfect cacophony to end on. It's been 3 years since I worked in Haiti, but the place and people are unforgettable. Despite their talents and passions, I was never quite sure whether Zach and Lacou Musique would be able to fulfil their dream of recording an album. With barely any money, it was clear the band was driven purely by their energy and desire to share the joy and colour of Haitian culture. After 5 years, Lacou Musique has at last recorded their debut album. I caught up with Zach Niles earlier this year.
I think that the recording of the album was an interesting practice in understanding the reality of life in Haiti and also the importance of just keeping going and kind of keeping the faith that it's worth these efforts.
Chris Phelan returned to help the band produce the album during a very chaotic time in Haiti.
At the beginning of the month, there were a lot of strikes going on in town, so the band was sort of caught there. And strangely enough, one of our members, Jonas, was supposed to be on one of the floats, the Carnival in Port-au-Prince, and specifically on one of the exact floats that got electrocuted, made world news. 15 people died as a result of that. It was just sheer luck that we convinced him to stay here and not go back. We wanted him to stay here so we could record because time was so dear to us, and that ended up obviously keeping him from getting hurt. One of the band members was in the hospital when we got here. He fell to a sudden illness and passed away last week. Young guy, 42, he's an accordion player.
When Lacou Musique's accordionist, Alan Juste, died 1 week into recording the album, it was a terrible blow to the group.
This thing that we had been working towards for 4 years and very much with Alan, and you know, you take a breath and you're trying to decide, how do you honor him, honor his role in the band? We all sat, we cried together, we went out the next night and just shared stories about Alan, laughed and talked and cried and drank rum, and we all decided that the best thing to do is to move forward and dedicate the album to him. And it was sort of this constant daily reminder of how difficult things can be and how much determination you have to keep in your spirit to make something like this happen, you know, to stick with a vision and follow through with it. You know, it feels like it could have at any point
the band could have decided not to do it or taken something as a bad sign or whatever it is. And instead, they just took it as something to rise above and work harder and give more to the project, which was really palpable. I mean, I'm not just saying that for the sake of an interview. I mean, it really, you felt the band kind of become stronger and more determined to make the music that much better and to sort of say something more profound. After the last recording, they raised us all up on their shoulders, kind of like we had just won the championships of a big game or something like that. It was just such a victorious feeling. And I think, you know, whether the record does anything in the world or not, I think just getting through that process and you know, that long stretch from me meeting Jonas and Steve back in 2010 to finishing that recording, it just, no matter what happens now, we feel like we won.
Later this year will be the first time the band will tour outside Haiti. And as the band bursts forth onto the international touring scene, it's the power of live music and its ability to connect people and cultures which continues to inspire Zach Niles.
I don't know why I originally got into it, but I certainly know that why I'm still interested in showing music from different cultures to people around the world. I just feel like getting people to know each other, to empathize, it's the most crucial thing we can do in the world. I really don't believe there are any differences between people, and when you get to know somebody, all the fear and all the mystery and all the sort of danger melts away.
Their live shows are legendary around Port-au-Prince. Throughout the 5 years, they've honed their performances and now are ready to rock the world.
I personally and we Lacou Musique want to go and tour and project the real image of Haiti that probably people don't know. Yes, we do have some things like every other country that needs to be fixed, but the big picture of Haiti, that's what we want to go on tour with. That's what we want to invite people to see, to feel. You have to see it, you have to live it, you have to feel it live.
This has been another Earshot podcast. Lacou Musique, Haiti's expression of hope, was produced by Brietta Haig and the technical producer was Mark Don. You can find a video of the band on our website and details about their upcoming international tour. And don't forget that all of the stories featured in Earshot can also be found via the very handy ABC Radio app. It's free to download from the Apple Store or from Google Play. I'm Lorena Allen, and I look forward to your company again next time on Earshot.
The astonishing ability of the human brain to block out pain, recover from stroke, even reduce the effects of autism, all without drugs or surgery.
Timothy today, he's gone from severely autistic to mildly autistic. He got an A in English, he's just graduated high school now, has some friends, and he's going to get a job.
Norman Doidge on the wonders of the plastic brain, and you can download or stream this Big Ideas from the RN homepage.